Bridget saw you in comfortably?
Yes, thank you. Tick, tick, tick,
tock.
I don't usually admit new girls at such an advanced age. I find it is harder for them to grow accustomed to the Spence way of life.
There's one black mark against me already.
But under the circumstances, I feel it our Christian duty to make an exception. I am sorry for your loss.
I say nothing and fix my gaze on the silly little German milkmaid. She's smiling and rosy-cheeked, most likely on her way back to a small village where her mother is waiting for her, and there are no dark shadows lurking.
When I don't respond, Mrs. Nightwing continues. I understand that custom dictates a mourning period for at least a year, but I find that such persistent reminders are not healthy. It keeps us centered on the dead and not the living. I recognize that this is unconventional.
She gives me a long look over the top of her glasses to see if I will object. I don't.
It is important that you get on here and be on equal footing with the other girls. After all, some of them have been with us for years, far longer than they've been with their own families. Spence is rather like a family, one with affection and honour, rules and consequences.
She emphasizes this last word.
Therefore, you will wear the same uniform everyone else wears. I trust this will be acceptable to you?
Yes, I say. And though I feel a bit guilty about abandoning my mourning weed so soon, in truth, I'm grateful for the chance to look like everybody else. It will help me to remain unnoticed, I hope.
Splendid. Now, you will be in the first class with six young ladies also of your age. Breakfast is served promptly at 9 o'clock. You will have instruction in French with Mademoiselle Lafarge, drawing with Miss Moore, music with Mr. Grunwald. I shall direct your lessons on deportment. Prayers are said at 6 o'clock each evening in the chapel. In fact,
she glances at the mantel clock,
we shall be leaving for the chapel very shortly. Dinner follows at 7. There is free time in the great hall afterward, with all girls in bed by 10.
She attempts one of those confessional smiles, the sort usually seen in reverent portraits of Florence Nightingale. In my experience, such smiles mean that the real message, the one hidden by manners and good posture, will need to be translated.
I think you shall be very happy here, Miss Doyle.
Translation? That is an order.
Spence has turned out many wonderful young women who've gone on to make very good marriages.
We don't expect much more from you. Please don't embarrass us.
Why, you might even be sitting here in my position someday.
If you turn out to be completely unmarriageable and you don't end up in an Austrian convent making lace nightgowns. Mrs. Nightwing's smile wavers a bit. I know that she's waiting for me to say something charming, something that will convince her that she hasn't made a mistake in taking in a grief-stricken girl who seems completely unworthy of Spence's training. Come on, Gemma, throw her a bone. Tell her how happy and proud you are to be part of the Spence family. I only nod. Her smile disappears.
While you're here, I can be a solid ally if you follow the rules, or the sword that cuts you into shape if you do not. Do we understand each other?
Yes, Mrs. Nightwing.
Excellent. Let me show you around, and then you may dress for prayers. Your room is here.
We're on the third floor, making our way down a long hall with many doors. Photographic portraits of Spence's various classes hang on the walls. Grainy faces, even harder to see in the dim light of the few gas lamps. Finally, we come to a room at the end, on the left. Mrs. Nightwing opens the door wide to reveal a cramped, musty-smelling room that could optimistically be described as cheerless and realistically be called drab. There's a water-stained desk and chair with a lamp. Iron beds flank the left and right walls. One bed looks lived in, with a neatly tucked quilt. The other, my bed, fits tight in a nook under a steep eave that could probably break my skull if I sit up too quickly. It's a dormer room, one that juts out over the side of the building like an afterthought. Perfect for an afterthought of a girl, added to the rosters at the last possible moment. Mrs. Nightwing rubs a finger over the top of the desk and frowns upon discovering dust there.
Of course, we do give preference to those girls who are returning with us this year, she says, by way of apology for my new home. But I think you'll find your room cheery and quite serviceable. There is a marvellous view from the window.
She's right. Standing in front of it, I can see the moonlit back lawn, the gardens, the chapel on the hill, and a great wall of trees. It is a lovely view, I say, trying to be both cheery and serviceable. It appeases Mrs. Nightwing, who smiles.
You'll share a room with Anne Bradshaw. Anne is most helpful. She is one of our scholarship students.
That's a nice way of saying one of our charity cases, some poor girl packed off to school by a distant relative or given a scholarship by one of Spence's benefactors. Anne's quilt is tucked in straight and tight as glass, and I wonder what her situation is or whether we'll get on well enough for her to want to tell me. The closet door is ajar. A uniform hangs there, a flared white skirt, white shirt with lace insets along the bib and puffed sleeves tapering to fitted cuffs, white boots with hooks and laces, and a dark blue velvet cape with a hood.
You may dress for prayers. I'll give you a moment.
She closes the door, and I slip into the uniform, fastening the many small buttons. The hem is too short, but otherwise it is a comfortable fit. Mrs. Nightwing notices the gap at the bottom, frowns.
You're quite tall.
Just what a girl wants to be reminded of.
We'll get Bridget to add a ruffle to the hem.
She turns, and I follow her out. Where do those doors lead? I ask, pointing to the darkened wing on the opposite side of the landing, where two heavy doors stand sentry, secured by a large lock. It's the kind of lock needed to keep people out, or hold something in. Mrs. Nightwing's brows furrow, her lips go tight.
That is the East Wing. It was destroyed in a fire years ago. We don't use it anymore, so we've closed it off. Saves on heating. Come along.
She swings past me. I start after her, then glance back, my eyes falling even with the bottom of those locked doors where there's a one-inch crack of light. It may be the lateness of the day and the long journey, or the fact that I'm growing accustomed to seeing things, but I could swear that I see a shadow move along the floor behind the doors. No, be gone. I refuse to let the past find me here. I have to get a hold of myself. So I close my eyes for just a second and make myself a promise. There is nothing there. I am tired. I will open my eyes and see only a door. When I look, there is nothing.